Maybe we should have pursued a diplomatic resolution in that beast arena.
I was...
She shrank away from what she saw on his face, blinking harder, brows drawn together.
I was only asking.
Everyone is only asking. Everyone wants something from me, and I'm the bad guy if they don't get it. He spun away from her, cloak whirling, and found himself at the veranda's edge, leaning on the rail. The Durasteel piping groaned in his mechanical grip. I'm sick of this, he muttered. I'm sick of all of it. He didn't hear her come to him. The rush of air cars through the lanes below the veranda drowned her footsteps. He didn't see the hurt on her face or the hint of tears in her eyes, but he could feel them in the tentative softness of her touch when she stroked his arm, and he could hear them in her hesitant voice.
Anakin, what is it? What is it really?
He shook his head. He couldn't look at her. Nothing that's your fault, he said. Nothing you can help.
Don't shut me out, Anakin. Let me try.
You can't help me. He stared down through dozens of crisscross lanes of traffic, down toward the invisible bedrock of the planet.
I'm trying to help you.
He'd seen something in her eyes when he'd mentioned the Council and Palpatine.
He'd seen it.
What aren't you telling me? Her hand went still, and she did not answer. I can feel it, Padme. I sense you're keeping a secret.
Oh?
She said softly, lightly. That's funny. I was thinking the same about you. He just kept staring down over the rail into the invisible distance below. She moved close to him, moved against him, her arm sliding around his shoulders, her cheek leaning lightly on his arm. Why does it have to be like this? Why does there have to be even such a thing as war? Can't we just go back? Even just to pretend? Let's pretend we're back at the lake on Naboo, just the two of us, when there was no war, no politics, no plotting, just us, you and me, and love. That's all we need. You and me, and love.
Right now, Anakin couldn't remember what that had been like.
I have to go, he said. The Chancellor is waiting.
Two masked, robed, silent Red Guards flanked the door to the Chancellor's private box at the Galaxy's Opera. Anakin didn't need to speak. As he approached, one of them said, "You are expected," and opened the door. The small round box had only a handful of seats, overlooking the spread of overdressed beings who filled every seat in the orchestra. On this opening night, it seemed everyone had forgotten there was a war on. Anakin barely gave a glance toward the immense sphere of shimmering water that rippled gently in the stage's artificial zero-G. He had no interest in ballet, Mon Calamari or otherwise. In the dim semi-gloom, Palpatine sat with the Speaker of the Senate, Mos Amida, and his administrative aide, Sly Moore. Anakin stopped at the back of the box.
If I were the spy the Council wants me to be, Anakin thought, I suppose I should be creeping up behind them so that I can listen in.
A spasm of distaste passed over his face. He took care to wipe it off before he spoke.
Chancellor, sorry I'm late.
Palpatine turned toward him and his face lit up.
Yes, Anakin, don't worry. Come in, my boy, come in. Thank you for your report on the council meeting this afternoon. It made most interesting reading. And now I have good news for you. Clone intelligence has located General Grievous.
That's tremendous.
Anakin shook his head, wondering if Obi-Wan would be embarrassed to have been scooped by the clones.
He won't escape us again.
I'm going to Moore. Take a note. I will direct the Council to give you this assignment, Anakin. Your gifts are wasted on Coruscant. You should be out in the field. You can attend Council meetings by holoconference.
Anakin frowned. Thank you, sir, but the Council coordinates Jedi assignments.
Of course, of course. Mustn't step on any Jedi toes, must we? They are so jealous of the political prerogatives. Still, I shall wonder at their collective wisdom if they choose someone else.
As I said in my report, they've already assigned Obi-Wan to find Grievous. Because they want to keep me here, Anakin thought, where I'm supposed to spy on you.
To find him, yes, but you are the best man to apprehend him. Though, of course, the Jedi Council cannot always be trusted to do the right thing.
They try. I believe they try, sir.
Do you still? Sit down.
Palpatine looked at the other two beings in the box.
Leave us.
They rose and withdrew. Anakin took Mas Amita's seat. Palpatine gazed distractedly down at the graceful undulations of the Mon Calamari principal soloist for a long moment. Frowning, as though there was so much he wanted to say, he was unsure where to begin. Finally, he sighed heavily and leaned close to Anakin.
Anakin, I think you know by now that I cannot rely upon the Jedi Council. That is why I put you on it. If they have not yet tried to use you in their plot, they soon will.
Anakin kept his face carefully blank. I'm not sure I understand.
You must sense what I have come to suspect, Palpatine said grimly. The Jedi Council is after more than independence from Senate oversight. I believe they intend to control the Republic itself.
Chancellor,
I believe they are planning treason. They hope to overthrow my government and replace me with someone weak enough that Jedi mind tricks can control his every word.
I can't believe the Council.
Anakin, search your feelings. You do know, don't you?
Anakin looked away. I know they don't trust you.
Or the Senate, or the Republic, or democracy itself for that matter. The Jedi Council is not elected. It selects its own members according to its own rules. A less generous man than I might say, whim, and gives them authority backed by power. They rule the Jedi as they hope to rule the Republic, by fiat.
I admit, Anakin looked down at his hands. My faith in them has been shaken.
How? Have they approached you already? Have they ordered you to do something dishonest?
Palpatine's frown cleared into a gently wise smile that was oddly reminiscent of Yoda's.
They want you to spy on me, don't they?
It's all right, Anakin. I have nothing to hide. I don't know what to say.
Do you remember? Palpatine said, drawing away from Anakin so that he could lean back comfortably in his seat. How, as a young boy, when you first came to this planet, I tried to teach you the ins and outs of politics?
Anakin smiled faintly. I remember that I didn't much care for the lessons.
For any lessons, as I recall. But it's a pity. You should have paid more attention. To understand politics is to understand the fundamental nature of thinking beings. Right now, you should remember one of my first teachings. All those who gain power are afraid to lose it.
The Jedi use their power for good, Anakin said, a little too firmly.
Good is a point of view, Anakin, and the Jedi concept of good is not the only valid one. Take your Dark Lords of the Sith, for example. From my reading, I have gathered that the Sith believed in justice and security every bit as much as the Jedi.
Jedi believe in justice and peace.
In these troubled times, is there a difference?
Palpatine asked mildly.
The Jedi have not done a stellar job of bringing peace to the galaxy, you must agree. Who's to say the Sith might not have done better?
This is another of those arguments you probably shouldn't bring up in front of the Council, if you know what I mean. Anakin replied with a disbelieving smile.
Oh, yes. Because the Sith would be a threat to the Jedi Order's power. Lesson one.
Anakin shook his head.
Because the Sith are evil. From a Jedi's point of view, Palpatine allowed, evil is a label we all put on those who threaten us, isn't it? Yet the Sith and the Jedi are similar in almost every way, including their quest for greater power.
The Jedi's quest is for greater understanding, Anakin countered, for greater knowledge of the Force. which brings with it greater power, does it not?
Well, yes. Anakin had to laugh. I should know better than to argue with a politician.
We're not arguing, Anakin. We're just talking. Palpatine shifted his weight, settling in comfortably.
Perhaps the real difference between the Jedi and the Sith lies only in their orientation. A Jedi gains power through understanding, and a Sith gains understanding through power. This is the true reason the Sith have always been more powerful than the Jedi. The Jedi fear the dark side so much, they cut themselves off from the most important aspect of life. Passion. Of any kind. They don't even allow themselves to love.
Except for me, Anakin thought. But then, I've never been exactly the perfect Jedi.
The Sith do not fear the dark side. The Sith have no fear. They embrace the whole spectrum of experience, from the heights of transcendent joy to the depths of hatred and despair. Beings have these emotions for a reason, Anakin. That is why the Sith are more powerful. They are not afraid to feel.
The Sith rely on passion for strength, Anakin said. But when that passion runs dry, what's left?
Perhaps nothing. Perhaps a great deal. Perhaps it never runs dry at all. Who can say?
They think inward, only about themselves, Anakin said.
And the Jedi don't? The Chancellor asked.
The Jedi are selfless. We erase the self to join with the flow of the Force. We care only about others.
Palpatine again gave him that smile of gentle wisdom. Or so you've been trained to believe. I hear the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi in your answers, Anakin. What do you really think?
Anakin suddenly found the ballet a great deal more interesting than Palpatine's face. I don't know anymore.
It is said that if one could ever entirely comprehend a single grain of sand, really, truly understand everything about it, one would, at the same time, entirely comprehend the universe. Who's to say that a Sith, by looking inward, sees less than a Jedi does by looking out?
The Jedi are good. That's the difference. I don't care who sees what.
What the Jedi are, Palpatine said gently, is a group of very powerful beings you consider to be your comrades. And you are loyal to your friends. I have known that for as long as I have known you, and I admire you for it. But are your friends loyal to you?
Anakin shot him a sudden frown. What do you mean?
Would a true friend ask you to do something that's wrong?
I'm not sure it's wrong, Anakin said. Obi-Wan might have been telling the truth. It was possible. They might only want to catch Sidious. They might really be trying to protect Palpatine. They might. Maybe.
Have they asked you to break the Jedi Code? To violate the Constitution? To betray a friendship? To betray your own values.
Chancellor, think, Anakin.
I have always tried to teach you to think. Yes, yes, Jedi do not think. They know, but those stale answers aren't good enough now in these changing times. Consider their motives. Keep your mind clear of assumptions. The fear of losing power is a weakness of both the Jedi and the Sith.
Anakin sank lower in his seat. Too much had happened in too short a time. Everything jumbled together in his head, and none of it seemed to make complete sense. Except for what Palpatine said. That made too much sense.
This puts me in mind of an old legend, Palpatine murmured idly.
Anakin, are you familiar with the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
Anakin shook his head.
Ah. I thought not. It is not a story the Jedi would tell you. It's a Sith legend. Of a Dark Lord who had turned his sight inward so deeply that he had come to comprehend and master life itself. And, because the two are one when seen clearly enough,
death itself.
Anakin sat up. Was he actually hearing this? He could keep someone safe from death?
According to the legend, Palpatine said, he could directly influence the midichlorians to create life. With such knowledge, to maintain life in someone already living would seem a small matter, don't you agree?
A universe of possibility blossomed inside Anakin's head. He murmured, stronger than death.
The dark side seems to be, from my reading, the pathway to many abilities some would consider unnatural.
Anakin couldn't seem to get his breath. What happened to him?
Oh, well, it is a tragedy after all, you know. Once he has gained this ultimate power, he has nothing to fear save losing it. That's why the Jedi Council brought him to mind, you know.
But what happened?
Well, to safeguard his power's existence, he teaches the path toward it to his apprentice.
And?
And his apprentice kills him in his sleep, Palpatine said with a careless shrug. Plagueis never sees it coming. That's the tragic irony, you see. He can save anyone in the galaxy from death, except himself.
What about the apprentice? What happens to him?
Oh, him. He goes on to become the greatest Dark Lord the Sith have ever known.
So, Anakin murmured, it's only a tragedy for Plagueis. For the apprentice, the legend has a happy ending.
Oh, well, yes. Quite right. I'd never really thought of it that way.
Rather like what we were talking about earlier, isn't it? What if, Anakin said slowly, almost not daring to speak the words, it's not just a legend?
I'm sorry?
What if Darth Plagueis really lived? What if someone really had this power?
Oh, I am rather certain that Plagueis did indeed exist. And if someone actually had this power, well, he would indeed be one of the most powerful men in the galaxy. Not to mention, virtually immortal.
How would I find him?
I'm sure I couldn't say. You could ask your friends in the Jedi Council, I suppose. But of course, if they ever found him, they'd kill him on the spot. Not as punishment for any crime, you understand. Innocence is irrelevant to the Jedi. They would kill him simply for being Sith, and his knowledge would die with him.
I have to. Anakin found himself half out of his seat, fists clenched and trembling. He forced himself to relax and sit back down, and he took a deep breath. You seem to know so much about this. I need you to tell me. Would it be possible, possible at all, to learn this power? Palpatine shrugged, regarding him with that smile of gentle wisdom.
Well, clearly, he said, not from a Jedi.
For a long, long time after leaving the opera house, Anakin sat motionless in his idling speeder, eyes closed, resting his head against the edge of his mechanical hand. The speeder bobbed gently in the air wakes of the passing traffic. He didn't feel it. Klaxons blared, rising and fading as angry pilots swerved around him. He didn't hear them. Finally, he sighed and lifted his head. He stroked a private code into the speeder's comm screen. After a moment, the screen lit up with an image of Padme's half-asleep face.
Anakin?
She rubbed her eyes, blinking.
Where are you? What time is it?
Padme, I can't. He stopped himself, huffing a sigh out through his nose. Listen, Padme, something's come up. I have to spend the night at the temple.
Oh. Well, all right, Anakin. I'll miss you.
I'll miss you, too. He swallowed. I miss you already.
We'll be together tomorrow?
Yes. And soon, for the rest of our lives. We'll never have to be apart again. She nodded sleepily.
Rest well, my love.
I'll do my best. You too. She blew him a kiss, and the screen went blank.
Anakin fired thrusters and slid the speeder expertly into traffic, angling toward the Jedi Temple, because that part, the part about spending the night at the temple, was the part that wasn't a lie. The lie was that he was going to rest, that he was going to even try. How could he rest when every time he closed his eyes, he could see her screaming on the birthing table? Now the Council's insult burned hotter than ever. He even had a name, a story, a place to start. But how could he explain to the Archives Master why he needed to research a Sith legend of immortality? Yet maybe he didn't need the Archives after all. The Temple was still the greatest nexus of Force energy on the planet, perhaps even the galaxy. And it was unquestionably the best place in the galaxy for intense, focused meditation. He had much he needed the Force to teach him, and a very short time to learn. He would start by thinking inward, thinking about himself. Chapter 13, The Will of the Force. When her handmaiden Mote awakened her with the word that C-3PO had announced a Jedi was waiting to see her, Padme flew out of bed, threw on a robe, and hurried out to her living room, a smile breaking through her sleepiness like the dawn outside. But it was Obi-Wan. The Jedi Master had his back to her, hands clasped behind him, as he drifted restlessly about the room, gazing with abstracted lack of interest at her collection of rare sculpture. "Obi-Wan," she said breathlessly, "has..." She bit off the following. "Something happened to Anakin?" How would she explain why this was the first thing out of her mouth? "Has C-3PO offered you anything to drink?" He turned to her, a frown clearing from his brow. "Senator," he said warmly. "So good to see you again. I apologize for the early hour, and yes, your protocol droid has been quite insistent on offering me refreshment." His frown began to regather. "But as you may guess, this is not a social call. I've come to speak with you about Anakin." Her years in politics had trained her well, even as her heart lurched and a shrill, "How much does he know?" echoed inside her head. Her face remained only attentively blank. A primary rule of Republic politics: tell as much truth as you can, especially to a Jedi. "I was very happy to learn of his appointment to the Council." "Yes, it is perhaps less than he deserves, though I'm afraid it may be more than he can handle." "Has he been to see you?" "Several times," she said evenly. "Something is wrong, isn't it?" Obi-Wan tilted his head, and a hint of rueful smile showed through his beard. "You should have been a Jedi." She managed a light laugh. "And you should never go into politics. You're not very good at hiding your feelings. What is it?" "It's Anakin." With his pretense of cheer fading away, he seemed to age before her eyes. He looked very tired and profoundly troubled. "May I sit?"
"Please."
She waved him to the couch and lowered herself onto its edge beside him.
"Is he in trouble again?"
"I certainly hope not. This is more a personal matter." He shifted his weight uncomfortably.
"He's been put in a difficult position as the Chancellor's representative, but I think there's more to it than that. We had words yesterday, and we parted badly."
Her heart shrank. He must know, and he'd come to confront her, to bring their whole lives crashing down around their ears. She ached for Anakin, but her face showed only polite curiosity.
"What were these words about?" she asked delicately.
"I'm afraid I can't tell you," he said with a vaguely apologetic frown. "Jedi business, you understand." She inclined her head.
"Of course.
It's only that, well, I've been a bit worried about him. I was hoping he may have talked to you."
"Why would he talk to me about..."
She favored him with her best friendly but skeptical smile.
"Jedi business."
"Senator, Padme, please." He gazed into her eyes with nothing on his face but compassion and fatigued anxiety. "I am not blind, Padme.
though I have tried to be for Anakin's sake, and for yours.
What do you mean?
Neither of you is very good at hiding feelings either.
Obi-Wan,
Anakin has loved you since the day you met in that horrible junk shop on Tatooine. He's never even tried to hide it, though we do not speak of it. We pretend that I don't know. And I was happy to, because it made him happy. You made him happy, when nothing else ever truly could. He sighed, his brows drawing together. And you, Padme, skilled as you are on the Senate floor, cannot hide the light that comes to your eyes when anyone so much as mentions his name. She lurched to her feet.
I can't... Obi-Wan, don't make me talk about this. I don't mean to hurt you, Padme, nor even to make you uncomfortable.
I'm not here to interrogate you. I have no interest in the details of your relationship. She turned away, walking just to be moving, barely conscious of passing through the door out into the dawn-painted veranda.
Then why are you here?
He followed her respectfully. Anakin is under a great deal of pressure. He carries tremendous responsibilities for a man so young. When I was his age, I still had some years to go as a Padawan.
He is changing quickly,
and I have some anxiety about what he is changing into. It would be a very great mistake were he to leave the Jedi Order. She blinked as though he'd slapped her.
Why, that seems unlikely, doesn't it? What about this prophecy the Jedi put so much faith in? Isn't he the chosen one?
Very probably. But I have scanned this prophecy. It says only that a chosen one will be born and bring balance to the Force. Nowhere does it say he has to be a Jedi. She blinked harder, fighting down a surge of desperate hope that left her breathless.
He doesn't have to?
My master, Qui-Gon Jinn, believed that it was the will of the Force that Anakin should be trained as a Jedi. And we all have a certain, oh, I suppose you could call it, a Jedi-centric bias. It is a Jedi prophecy, after all.
But the will of the Force, isn't that what Jedi follow?
Well, yes, but you must understand that not even the Jedi know all there is to be known about the Force. No mortal mind can. We speak of the will of the Force as someone ignorant of gravity might say, it is the will of a river to flow to the ocean. It is a metaphor that describes our ignorance. The simple truth, if any truth is ever simple, is that we do not truly know what the will of the Force may be. We can never know. It is so far beyond our limited understanding that we can only surrender to its mystery.
What does this have to do with Anakin?
She swallowed, but her voice stayed tight and thin.
And with me.
I fear that some of his current difficulty has to do with your relationship.
If you only knew how much, she thought.
What do you want me to do? He looked down. I cannot tell you what to do, Padme. I can only ask you to consider Anakin's best interests. You know the two of you can never be together while he remains in the Order.
A bleak chill settled into her chest. Obi-Wan, I can't talk about this.
Very well. But remember that the Jedi are his family. The Order gives his life structure. It gives him a direction. You know how undisciplined he can be.
And that's why he is the only Jedi I could ever love, she thought.
Then she said,
Yes. Yes, of course.
If his true path leads him away from the Jedi, so be it. But please, for both of your sakes, tread carefully. Be sure. Some decisions can never be reversed.
Yes, she said slowly,
feelingly.
I know that too well.
He nodded as though he understood, though of course he did not understand at all. We all do these days. A soft chiming came from within his robe. Excuse me, he said, and turned aside, producing a comlink from an inner pocket. Yes? A man's voice came thinly through the comlink,
deep and clipped.
We are calling the Council into special session. We've located General Grievous.
Thank you, Master Windu, Obi-Wan said. I'm on my way.
General Grievous. Her eyes went hot and stung with sudden tears. And so they would take her Anakin away from her again. She felt a stirring below her ribs. Away from us, she amended. And there was so much love and fear and joy and loss, all swirling and clashing within her, that she dared not speak. She only stared blindly out across the smog-shrouded cityscape as Obi-Wan came close to her shoulder. Padme, he said softly, gently, almost regretfully. I will not tell the Council of this, any of it. I'm very sorry to burden you with this, and I hope I haven't upset you too much. We have all been friends for so long, and I hope we always will be.
Thank you, Obi-Wan, she said faintly. She couldn't look at him. From the corner of her eye, she saw him incline his head respectfully and turn to go.
For a moment, she said nothing, but as his footsteps receded, she said, Obi-Wan?
She heard him stop.
You love him too, don't you?
When he didn't answer, she turned to look. He stood motionless, frowning, in the middle of the expanse of buff carpeting.
You do. You love him.
He lowered his head. He looked very alone.
Please do what you can to help him, he said, and left.
The hollow scan of Utapau rotated silently in the center of the Jedi Council chamber. Anakin had brought the hollow projector from the Chancellor's office. Obi-Wan wondered idly if the projector had been scanned for recording devices planted by the Chancellor to spy on their meeting, then dismissed the thought. In a sense, Anakin was the Chancellor's recording device. And that's our fault, he thought. The only Council members physically present, other than Obi-Wan and Anakin, were Mace Windu and Agent Kolar. The Council reached a quorum by the projected holopresences of Ki-Adi Mundi en route to Magito, Plo Koon and Kato Nymoidia, and Yoda, who was about to make planetfall on Kashyyyk.
Why Utapau? Mace Windu was saying. A neutral system of little strategic significance and virtually no planetary defense force.
Perhaps that is itself the reason, Agent Kolar offered.
Easily taken.
And their sinkhole-based culture can hide a tremendous number of droids from long-range scans.
Ki-Adi Mundi's frown wrinkled the whole length of his forehead.
Our agents on Utapau have made no report of this.
They may be detained, or dead, Obi-Wan said. Mace Windu leaned toward Anakin, scowling.
How could the Chancellor have come by this information when we know nothing about it?
Clone intelligence intercepted a partial message in a diplomatic packet from the chairman of Utapau, Anakin told him. We've only managed to verify its authenticity within the past hour. Obi-Wan felt a frown crawl onto his forehead at the way Anakin now referred to the Chancellor's office as we.
Clone intelligence, Mace said heavily, reports to us.
I beg your pardon, Master Windu, but that is no longer the case. Though Anakin's expression was perfectly solemn, Obi-Wan thought he could detect a hint of satisfaction in his young friend's voice. I thought it had been already made clear. The constitutional amendment, bringing the Jedi into the Chancellor's office, naturally includes troops commanded by Jedi. Palpatine is now Supreme Commander of the Grand Army of the Republic.
Pointless it is to squabble over jurisdiction,
the image of Yoda said.
Act on this we must.
I believe we all agree on that, Anakin said briskly. Let's move to the operational planning. The Chancellor has requested that I lead this mission, and so I...
The Council will decide this, May said sternly, not the Chancellor.
Dangerous Grievous is. To face him, steady minds are needed. Masters we should send.
Perhaps of all the Council, only Obi-Wan could detect the shadow of disappointment and hurt that crept into Anakin's eyes.
Obi-Wan understood perfectly and could even sympathize. To take the field would have slipped Anakin out from under the pressures of what he saw as his conflicting duties.
"Given the strain on our current resources," Mace Windu said, "I recommend we send only one Jedi, Master Kenobi, which would leave Mace and Agent Kolar, both among the greatest Blades beings the Jedi Order had ever produced, here on Coruscant, in case Sidious did indeed take this opportunity to make a dramatic move. Not to mention Anakin, who was a brigade's worth of firepower in his own right." Obi-Wan nodded. Perfectly logical. Everyone would agree. Except Anakin. He leaned forward, red climbing his cheeks. He wasn't so successful the last time he met Grievous.
"Anakin," Obi-Wan began.
"No offense, my master. I am only stating a fact."
"Oh, no, not at all. You're quite right. But I have a feel for how he fights now, and for how he runs away. I am certain I can catch him."
"Master, and you, my young friend, have duties here on Coruscant. Extremely important duties that require your full attention," Obi-Wan reminded him. "Am I being clear?"
Anakin didn't answer. He sank back into his chair and turned away.
"Obi-Wan, my choice is,"
Yoda said. Ki-Adi Mundi's image nodded.
"I concur. Let's put it to a vote."
Mace Windu counted nods.
6 in favor.
He waited, looking at Anakin.
"Further comment?"
Anakin only stared at the wall. After a moment, Mace shrugged.
"It is unanimous."
Senator Chi Ikwe accepted a tube of aqualish hoi broth from C-3PO's refreshment tray.
"I am very grateful to be included here," she said, her dewlaps jiggling as she tilted her blue head in a gesture around Padme's living room at the gathering of senators. "I speak directly only from my own sector, of course, but I can tell you that many senators are becoming very nervous indeed. You may not know that the new governors are arriving with full regiments of clone troops, what they call security forces. We all have begun to wonder if these regiments are intended to protect us from the separatists or to protect the governors from us."
Padme looked up from the document reader in her hand. "I have reliable information that General Grievous has been located and that the Jedi are already moving against his position. The war may be over in a matter of days."
"But what then?" Bail Organa leaned forward, elbows to knees, fingers laced together. "How do we make Palpatine withdraw his governors? How do we stop him from garrisoning troops in all our systems?"
"We don't have to make him do anything," Padme said reasonably. "The Senate granted him executive powers only for the duration of the emergency."
"Yet it is only Palpatine himself who has the authority to declare when the emergency is over," Bail countered. "How do we make him surrender power back to the Senate?"
Chi Ikwe shifted backward.
"There are many who are willing to do just that," she said. "Not just my own people. Many senators. We are ready to make him surrender power."
Padme snapped the document reader closed. She looked from senator to senator expressionlessly. "Would anyone care for further refreshment?"
"Senator Amidala," Ikwe said. "I fear you don't understand."
"Senator Ikwe, another hoi broth?"
"No, that's..."
"Very well, then." She looked up at C-3PO. "3PO, that will be all. Please tell Mote and L.A. that they are dismissed for the day. Then you are free to power down for a while."
"Thank you, mistress,"
3PO replied.
"Though I must say, this discussion has been most stimulating."
3PO. Padme's tone went a trace extra firm. "That will be all."
"Yes, mistress. Of course. I quite understand."
The droid turned stiffly and shuffled out of the room. As soon as 3PO was safely out of earshot, Padme brandished the document reader as though it were a weapon.
"This is a very dangerous step. We cannot let this turn into another war."
"That's the last thing any of us wants,"
Bail said with a disapproving look at Senator Ikwe.
Alderaan has no armed forces. We don't even have a planetary defense system. A political solution is our only option.
Which is the purpose of this petition, Mon Mothma said, laying her soft hand over Padme's. We're hoping that a show of solidarity within the Senate might stop Palpatine from further subverting the Constitution. That's all. With the signatures of a full 2,000 senators, we still have less than we need to stop his supermajority from amending the Constitution any way he happens to want, Padme finished for her. She weighed the reader in her hand. I am willing to present this to Palpatine, but I am losing faith in the Senate's readiness or even ability to rein him in. I think we should consult the Jedi. Because I really think they can help, or because I just can't stand a lie to my husband, she thought. She couldn't say. She hoped that both were true, though she was sure only of the second. Bana Brimu examined her long, elegantly manicured fingertips. That, she said remotely, would be dangerous. Mon Mothma nodded. We don't know where the Jedi stand in all this. Padme sat forward. The Jedi aren't any happier with the situation than we are. Senator Brimu's high-arched cheekbones made the look she gave Padme appear even more distant and skeptical. You seem remarkably well-informed about Jedi business, Senator Amidala. Padme felt herself flush, and she didn't trust herself to answer.
Gideon Danu shook his head, doubt plainly written across his dark face. If we are to openly oppose the Chancellor, we need the support of the Jedi. We need their moral authority. Otherwise, what do we have?
The moral authority of the Jedi, such as it is, Bana Brimu said, has been spent lavishly upon war. I fear they have none left for politics. One Jedi, then, Padme offered to the others. At least let me speak the truth to my love. At least, please, she pleaded with them silently. She then said, There is one Jedi, one whom I truly know all of us can trust absolutely. Her voice trailed off into appalled silence when she realized that she wasn't talking about Anakin. This had been all about him when she'd started, all about her love, her need to be open with him, the pain that keeping the secret stabbed her heart at each and every beat. But when the thought had turned to trust, when it became a question of someone she knew, truly and absolutely knew she could trust, she discovered that she was talking about Obi-Wan. Anakin, something was breaking inside her. Oh, my love, what are they doing to us? Chi Ikwe shook her head.
Patience, Senator.
Fang Zar unknotted his fingers from his raggedly bushy beard and shrugged.
Yes, we cannot block the Chancellor's supermajority, but we can show him that opposition to his methods is growing. Perhaps that alone might persuade him to moderate his tactics.
Bana Brimu went back to examining her fingertips. When you present the petition of the 2,000, many things may change.
But, Gideon Danu said, will they change for the better?
Bail Organa and Mon Mothma exchanged glances that whispered of some shared secret. Bail said slowly,
Let us see what we can accomplish in the Senate before we involve the Jedi.
And as one after another of the senators agreed, Padme could only sit in silence, in mourning, grieving for the sudden death of an illusion. Anakin, Anakin, I love you. If only... But that, if only, would take her to a place she could not bear to go. In the end, she could only return to the thought she feared would echo within her for the rest of her life. Anakin, I'm sorry. The last of the hover tanks whirred up the ramp into the sky-shrouding wedge of the assault cruiser. It was followed by rank upon immaculately regimented rank of clone troopers, marshaled by battalions, marching in perfect synchrony. Standing alongside Obi-Wan on the landing deck,
Anakin watched them go.
He couldn't quite make himself believe he wasn't going along. It wasn't that he really wanted to go with Obi-Wan to Utapau, even though it'd be a relief to pull out of the political quagmire that was sucking him down. But how could he leave Padme now? He didn't even care anymore about being the Jedi to capture Grievous, though such a feat would almost certainly bring him his mastery. He was no longer certain he needed to be a master at all. Through the long black hours of meditation last night, meditation that was often indistinguishable from brooding, he had begun to sense a deeper truth within the Force, a submerged reality lurking like a sarlacc beneath the sunlit sands of Jedi training. Somewhere down there was all the power he would ever need. So no, it wasn't that he wanted to go. It was more, inexplicably, that he wanted Obi-Wan to stay. There was a cold void in his chest that he was afraid would soon fill with regret and grief. Of course, there was no chance at all that Obi-Wan wouldn't go. He'd be the last Jedi in the galaxy to defy an order of the Council. Not for the first time, Anakin found himself wishing that Obi-Wan could be a little more like the late Qui-Gon. Though he'd known Qui-Gon for mere days, Anakin could almost see him right now, brow furrowing as he gently inclined his head over his shorter Padawan. He could almost hear his gentle baritone instructing Obi-Wan to be mindful of the currents of the living Force. To do one's duty is not always to do right. Concern yourself with right action. Let duty take care of itself. But he couldn't say that. Though he'd passed his trials many months ago, to Obi-Wan, he was still the learner, not the master. All he could say was, "I have a bad feeling about this." Obi-Wan was frowning as he watched a clone deck crew load his blue and white starfighter onto the assault cruiser's flight deck. "I'm sorry, Anakin. Did you say something?" "You're going to need me on this one, Master." And he could feel an unexpected truth there, too. If he were to go along, if he could somehow bring himself to forget about Padme for a few days, if he could somehow get himself away from Palpatine and the Council and his meditations and politics and everything here on Coruscant that was dragging him this way and that way and sucking him under, if he could just tag along and play the Kenobian Skywalker game for a few days, everything might still be all right. If only. "It may be nothing but a wild bantha chase," Obi-Wan said. "Your job here is much more important, Anakin." "I know. The Sith." The word left a bitter taste in Anakin's mouth. The Council's manipulation had a rank stench of politics on it. Anakin shrugged helplessly, looking away. "I don't like you going off without me like this. It's a bad idea to split up the team. I mean, look what happened last time." "Don't remind me. You want to go spend another few months with somebody like Ventress, or worse?" "Anakin." Anakin could hear a gentle smile in Obi-Wan's voice. "Don't worry. I have enough clones to take 3 systems the size of Utapau's. I believe I should be able to handle the situation, even without your help." Anakin had to answer his smile. "Well, there's always a first time." Obi-Wan said, "We're not really splitting up, Anakin. We've worked on our own many times. Like when you took Padme to Naboo while I went to Kamino in Geonosis. And look how that turned out." "All right. Bad example," Obi-Wan admitted, his smile shading toward rueful. "Yet, years later, here we all are, still alive and still friends. My point, Anakin, is that even when we work separately, we work together. We had the same goals, end the war and save the Republic from the Sith. As long as we're on the same side, everything will come out well in the end. I'm certain of it." "Well," Anakin sighed, "I suppose you could be right. You are, once in a while. Occasionally." Obi-Wan chuckled and clapped him on the shoulder. "Farewell, old friend."
"Master, wait." Anakin turned to face him fully. He couldn't just stand here and let him walk away. Not now. He had to say something. He had a sinking feeling he might not get another chance.
Master, he said hesitantly, I know I've disappointed you in these past few days. I have been arrogant. I have not been very appreciative of your training, and what's worse, of your friendship. I offer no excuse, Master. My frustration with the Council, I know that none of it is your fault, and I apologize. For all of it. Your friendship means everything to me.
Obi-Wan gripped Anakin's mechanical hand, and with his other, he squeezed Anakin's arm above the joining of flesh and metal.
You are wise and strong, Anakin. You are a credit to the Jedi Order, and you have far surpassed my humble efforts at instruction.
Anakin felt his own smile turn melancholy. Just the other day, you were saying that my power is no credit to me. I'm not speaking of your power, Anakin, but of your heart. The greatness in you is a greatness of spirit. Courage and generosity, compassion and commitment, these are your virtues. Obi-Wan said gently, You have done great things, and I am very proud of you.
Anakin found he had nothing to say.
Well, Obi-Wan looked down, chuckling, releasing Anakin's hand and arm. I believe I hear General Grievous calling my name.
Goodbye, old friend. May the Force be with you.
All Anakin could offer in return was a reflexive echo. May the Force be with you. He stood, still and silent, and watched Obi-Wan walk away. Then he turned and slowly, head hanging, moved toward his speeder. The Chancellor was waiting.
Chapter 14. Free Fall in the Dark. A chill wind scoured the Chancellor's private landing deck at the Senate office building. Anakin stood wrapped in his cloak, chin to his chest, staring down at the deck below his feet. He didn't feel the chill or the wind. He didn't hear the whine of the Chancellor's private shuttle angling in for a landing, or smell the swirls of brown smog coiling along the wind. What he saw were the faces of senators who had stood on this deck to cheer for him. What he heard were exclamations of joy and congratulations when he returned their Supreme Chancellor to them unharmed. What he felt was a memory of hot pride at being the focus of so many eager HoloNet crews, anxious to get even the slightest glimpse of the man who had conquered Count Dooku. How many days ago had that been? He couldn't remember. Not many. When you don't sleep, days smear together into a haze of fatigue so deep it becomes a physical pain. The Force could keep him upright, keep him moving, keep him thinking, but it could not give him rest. Not that he wanted rest. Rest might bring sleep. What sleep might bring, he could not bear to know. He remembered Obi-Wan telling him about some poet he'd once read. He couldn't remember the name or the exact quote, but it was something about how there is no greater misery than to remember, with bitter regret, a day when you were happy. How had everything gone so fast from so right to so wrong? He couldn't even imagine.
Greasy dust swirled under the shuttle's repulsors as it settled to the deck. The hatch cycled open, and four of Palpatine's personal guards glided out, long robes catching the breeze in silken, blood-colored ripples. They split into two pairs to flank the doors as the Chancellor emerged beside the tall, bulky form of Mas Amida, the Speaker of the Senate. The Chagrian's horns tilted over Palpatine as they walked together, seemingly deep in conversation. Anakin moved forward to meet them.
Chancellor, he said, bowing a greeting.
Lord Speaker? Mas Amida looked at Anakin with a curl to his blue lips that on a human would have signaled disgust. It was a Chagrian smile.
Greetings, Your Grace. I trust the day find you well.
Anakin's eyes felt as if they'd been dusted with sand.
Very well, Lord Speaker. Thank you for asking.
Amida turned back to Palpatine, and Anakin's polite smile faded to a twist of contempt. Maybe he was just overtired, but somehow, looking at the curlings of the Chagrian's naked head tentacles as they twisted across his chest,
he found himself hoping that Obi-Wan hadn't been lying to him about Sidious. He rather hoped that Mas Amida might be a secret Sith, because something about the Speaker of the Senate was so revolting that Anakin could easily imagine just slicing his head in half. It gradually dawned on Anakin that Palpatine was giving Mas Amida the brush-off and was sending the red robes with him. Good. He wasn't in the mood to play games. By themselves, they could talk straight with each other. A little straight talk might be just what he needed. A little straight talk might burn through the fog of half-truths and subtle confusions that the Jedi Council had poured into his head. "So, Anakin," Palpatine said as the others moved away, "did you see your friend off?" Anakin nodded. If I didn't hate Grievous so much, I'd almost feel sorry for him. "Oh?" Palpatine appeared mildly interested. "Are Jedi allowed to hate?" "Figure of speech," Anakin said, waving this off. "It doesn't matter how I feel about Grievous. Obi-Wan will soon have his head." "Provided, of course," Palpatine murmured as he took Anakin's arm to guide him toward the entryway, "that the Council didn't make a mistake. I still believe Master Kenobi is not the Jedi for this job." Anakin shrugged irritably. Why did everyone keep bringing up things he didn't want to talk about? The Council was very sure in its decision. "Certainty is a fine thing," the Chancellor allowed, "though it too often happens that those who are the most entirely certain are also the most entirely wrong. What will the Council do if Kenobi proves unable to apprehend Grievous without your help?" "I'm sure I cannot say, sir. I imagine they will deal with that if and when it happens. The Jedi teach that anticipation is distraction." "I am no philosopher, Anakin. In my work, anticipation is often my sole hope of success. I must anticipate the actions of my adversaries, and even those of my allies. Even," he opened a hand toward Anakin, smiling, "my friends. It is the only way I can be prepared to take advantage of opportunity and, conversely, to avoid disaster." "But if a disaster comes about by the will of the Force..." "I'm afraid I don't believe in the will of the Force," Palpatine said, his smile turning apologetic. "I believe it is our will that matters. I believe that everything good in our civilization has come about not by the blind action of some mystical field of energy, but by the focused will of people, lawmakers and warriors, inventors and engineers, struggling with every breath of their bodies to shape galactic culture, to improve the lives of all." They stood now before the vaulted door to Palpatine's office. "Please come in, Anakin. Much as I enjoy a philosophical chat, that was not the reason I asked you to meet me. We have business to discuss, and I fear it may be very serious business indeed." Anakin followed him through the outer chambers to Palpatine's intimate private office. He took up a respectful standing position opposite Palpatine's desk, but the Chancellor waved him to a chair. "Please, Anakin, make yourself comfortable. Some of this may be difficult for you to hear." "Everything is, these days," Anakin muttered as he took a seat. Palpatine didn't seem to hear. "It concerns Master Kenobi. My friends among the senators have picked up some disturbing rumors about him. Many in the Senate believe that Kenobi is not fit for this assignment." Anakin frowned. "Are you serious?" "I'm most serious, I'm afraid. It is a complicated situation, Anakin. It seems there are some in the Senate who now regret having granted me emergency powers." "There have been dissenters and naysayers since before Geonosis, sir. Why should it be cause for concern now? And how does it affect Obi-Wan?" "I'm getting to that." Palpatine took a deep breath and swung his chair around so that he could gaze through his window of armored transparent steel onto the cityscape beyond. "The difference is that now some of these senators, actually a large number of them, seem to have given up on democracy. Unable to achieve their ends in the Senate, they are organizing into a cabal, preparing to remove me by other means."
"You mean treason?"
Anakin had enough Jedi discipline to force away his memory of using that word with Obi-Wan. I'm afraid so.
The rumor is that the ringleaders of this group may have fallen victim